May it please the court. My name is Andrew Hare and I represent Timothy Evans. Mr. Evans is appealing his convictions for two counts of sexual assault on a child, position of trust, and a pattern abuse guilty verdict. I intend to address the second issue as it appears in the briefs regarding the pattern of behavior instruction and the pattern of behavior argument lodged by the prosecution below. Preliminarily, the court is aware of the first issue concerns, or the first argument that I raised with respect to the trial court's ruling over defense objection introducing the other acts evidence that's at issue and of concern with regard to the second issue. 404B, basically the first line of it says that other acts are not admissible to prove the character of a defendant and that he acted in conformity therewith. The third prong of SPOTO, the SPOTO test, once we have resolved relevancy, addresses the question of whether the evidence is independent of the intermediate inference that the defendant has a bad character that could be employed to suggest that he acted in conformity with that character and is therefore guilty of the crime. The other acts are admissible for other permissible purposes, such as modus operandi, plan, common plan, scheme, identity, those kinds of things, knowledge. In this particular case, the state has basically said, based upon the instruction that the court gave the jury and based upon its argument, if you take the first line of 404B, what they're saying is that pattern of behavior is a permissible purpose.
Yeah. Rath said?
No, Rath does not say that, Your Honor. Rath is a case in which Justice Coates, writing for the Colorado Supreme Court, used that phrase, pattern of behavior, when he was addressing the factual circumstances that supported the use of that evidence with respect to permissible purposes, which is identity, modus operandi, for example, in that particular case. And so when he talked about it, he talked about those particular acts and described them as indicating a pattern of behavior in support of that particular permissible purpose. The court was not saying that pattern of behavior is the permissible purpose. There's a distinction with a difference. So for example, what I was going to say with regard to 404B is the state is saying that the acts are admissible to prove the pattern of behavior of the defendant in order to establish that he acted in conformity with that pattern of behavior and to show his guilt. That's a repudiation of the first line of 404B. I hope that makes sense, and I hope I'm making sense to your honors. I've offered the court a definition of the word pattern from Webster's Third. Really, it helps support Mr. Evans's argument and establish the egregious error that occurred here, both as to the instruction and the argument.
I guess you're going to have to take me back, and I apologize.
That's okay.
What's the difference between a pattern of behavior and a common plan and similar modus operandi? How do those phrases differ?
Well, I would move to Honey, Lemurado, and have another case I can't recall just offhand. Common plan requires a continuity, a connectivity, a nexus between the other act and the charged act, both temporally. The cases have talked about both temporal and logistic connectivity. And so there's a focus, there's a limit, there's a requirement when the court's making a ruling, and so there's a commonality between the two. But pattern of behavior is entirely general. That's why I offered the definition of pattern. And when you join what pattern means, and I take Webster's Third as a good example, the acts or traits that characterize an individual, and you connect that with behavior, it simply means that what is this person's character? What is their propensity? How do they behave? Generally speaking,
why doesn't it mean that they tend to commit a crime in the same manner? Or they can tend to commit other bad acts in the same manner as they committed the charged offense? Why isn't that, particularly from the eyes of a jury, why isn't that an interpretation of pattern?
Well, first, I would argue that both were submitted to the jury. There was common scheme, I believe, in the instruction, common plan. So it's not a redundancy. The jury would not have assumed that they meant the same thing. but the inclusion of the word common or commonality or scheme would necessarily focus the jury to limit its consideration of this evidence in deciding it first, does it really show a commonality? And so that's the limitation. But when we talk about a pattern of behavior, the inclusion of pattern with behavior is entirely general. There's no focus. There's no limitation on how you're characterizing that particular behavior, if you will.
What were the prosecution reasons for meeting or wanting this evidence? What did they offer it for?
Well, originally the prosecution, and to the prosecutions, I have to acknowledge, they did not really come up with this phraseology. This was the trial court coming up with this on her own in basically the order, the written order that the court issued, coming up with pattern of behavior and pattern of grooming behavior. And so the genesis of this particular phrase or objectionable phrase was of the court's doing, not necessarily the prosecution. But I can understand why the prosecution would want to now include that extremely general.
What was there? Was that their evidentiary thesis for wanting this evidence?
Well, the evidentiary thesis was to prove knowledge. That was originally their intention, and then also this common plan or common scheme, a commonality. When it came time for closing, and I appreciate the court's question, because it gets to one of the parts. It's not necessarily one of the four prongs, but it's an essential component of SPOTA, which is the evidentiary hypothesis. And the evidentiary hypothesis requires the prosecution to come up and say, hey, here's how we're going to present this evidence independent of that improper inference. And what we have in this particular closing argument, which is why the closing argument is so offensive and so important to really understanding what pattern of behavior means in this case and how the prosecution used it in this case, is that their evidentiary hypothesis was to lump all four of the other acts up, all three of the other acts, all four, three of the other gentlemen, including the alleged victim, in this case, NG, and to paint the broad stroke that Mr. Evans did something to them and how they reacted to Mr. Evans's conduct. And there are pages of this closing argument. They make fleeting reference to common scheme, an appropriate purpose that has limitation under Colorado case law. But they made fleeting reference to that particular proper purpose and talked about pattern of behavior over and over and over again. And they lumped all four of these gentlemen together. It's indistinguishable. So that what you have is Mr. Evans being convicted for his pattern of behavior. I mean, the original intention of this limitation is that a person is not convicted or judged based upon who they are, but what they're alleged to have done. And in this particular case, the entire closing argument, pages of it, are that he's being convicted for what his pattern of behavior showed with respect to all four.
Mr. Head, but in addition to 404B, here we also have a statute that specifically addresses part of the issue, 1610.301, and it specifically references grooming of a victim as something that's admissible. And that's what, you know, I would imagine the prosecution argued that that's exactly what Mr. Evans was doing. He was grooming these young men using similar conduct. And so how is it harmful to use pattern of behavior when, you know, what they're really doing is showing similar grooming behavior in three or four different instances?
Correct. The grooming, according to the statute, as I read it, is in reference to the grooming of the other other acts of that might indicate grooming of the victim. It is not with reference to grooming of other people. And so the acts... the statute says including grooming of a victim, and so it doesn't say grooming of any other people. So in this
of a victim, but each of these individuals was a victim.
Correct. That Mr. Evans does dispute in some level because of the ages of the individuals, both as to DR and I believe it's the other gentleman who was 18 at the time. So the question of whether they're victims is really contested by Mr. Evans, which highlights the prejudice in this case in part. But if we're going to get to grooming of a victim, then the evidentiary hypothesis has to be limited to that particular aspect of it. And when we have this closing argument, which is repeatedly referring to employing the jury to look at the pattern, look at the pattern, look at the pattern. We're moving away from the proper purposes, A, and proper limitations upon which the jury can consider the evidence and use it, and ensuring that it's independent of the intermediate inference that's impermissible, that he's simply acting in conformity with his bad character, and convicting him based upon that rather than based upon whether or not he actually committed the offenses charged against NG. If the court has no further questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kathy Gillespie, and my registration number is 26109, and I'm here on behalf of the people of the state of Colorado today. I'm going to jump right in on the issue that Mr. Hare addressed, and I want to point out for the court, first and foremost, the standard of review that the court is looking for here, which is a plain error standard of review. The defendant did not object. While he objected to the 404B evidence coming in, he did not object at the time of trial to the limiting instruction that was given before each of these boys testified, nor did he object at the end of the case when that instruction was included in the final instructions to the
jury. What's the prosecution's hypothesis for the evidence?
The DA was very specific, and he listed multiple theories. The first one was to show the defendant's motive and intent to use his position of trust to obtain sexual gratification from the young boys. The DA stated the common plan or scheme, the similarities between all of these various victims. The DA also said that he wanted to use it to show the motive and opportunity that the defendant created by using his position of trust as a spiritual advisor to get these boys into his office or rectory alone, close the door and seal them basically off from anybody that could witness what was going on. The DA also expressed that he was going to use the prior similars to show how the defendant used the victim's vulnerabilities. All of these boys had been going to the priest for spiritual advice. The named victim in this case and two others were going to him to get advice, two of them at the behest of their parents. The parents actually contacted the priest, asked him to come in and to advise these boys. The named victim in this case, NG, it was because of trouble that he had been getting in and difficulties that he had been having at home. They also talked about a lack of mistake, and this was directly related to the theory of the defense that was presented at trial. The theory of the defense was that this defendant priest was particularly a touchy person, and that he liked physical contact, but that he was not having the physical contact with the boys for the purpose of his sexual gratification. The trial court in this case gave probably a 4 or 5 page single space detailed written ruling on why these various acts were being admitted.
How was the jury instructed concerning how the evidence could be used?
The instruction itself talked about the defendant's knowledge, pattern of behavior, and common scheme. And then, of course, it had the paragraph attached to that that says you can't consider it for the guilt or innocence, only for the limited purpose to which it was being offered.
Aren't concepts like modus operandi and common scheme really identity theories, ways of identifying people?
They are. I think that that's the way it was
commonly
used.
Was identity an issue here?
I think here it was more to show kind of that lack of mistake. Because of the subtle nature and the grooming that this particular defendant did with these victims, I think he was attempting to argue at trial that they misunderstood his intentions, that they were trying to help them, he was trying to help them with their sexual issues or their inability to be close to other people in their personal relationships. And so
In other words, he's raising the defense that the touching was inadvertent. If it occurred, was inadvertent?
Yes, in the court file, there's actually a theory of the defense instruction on page 320 in the flat file. And his theory, and I had just used phrases out of it, was that the defendant was demonstrative with his parishioners and never intended the contact to be for sexual gratification or abuse. So that was his specific theory at trial. And I think that the fact that this pattern that the defendant used was his pattern of grooming. He specifically went to these boys. One of them was an adult, one of them was 25, but the boys would come into him either at the behest of their parents or to the third boy wanted to be a priest, and so he was coming to the defendant as for advice, for spiritual advice. He would use that circumstance to then bring them into his office, close the door, and the similarities between how he led these boys into a situation where they could be sexually abused are strikingly similar, all the way down to the language that he uses. The fact that he would lie them down on the floor, he would lay next to them. He would tell them to relax, that what they were doing was normal. And then the same type of touching, he would a light caress over their chest, their lower legs, and then he would move his hand up underneath the shorts, and in three out of the four made contact with their genital area. So,
not true in all instances.
In three out of the four. The fourth, one of them, and I think it was JF, the 17-year-old young man, the defendant touched his upper thigh, caressed under his boxers, but did not get as far as the genital area before JF jumped up and left. So I think that the pattern language, and the defendant talks about how there's a nexus between the pattern behavior and what the element is that they're trying to prove. And in this case, there was. They were using the striking similarities to disprove his claim that these boys misunderstood this, that that wasn't his intention. And I think that based on the specific purposes delineated in 1610.301, talking about preparation and grooming of a victim, this is just classic textbook grooming. It doesn't get any better than this as far as prior similar evidence showing that this defendant used the same type of pattern to convince these young men to have sexual contact with him or to be subjected to sexual contact. And that went to his motive, his intent, all of the theories delineated by the DA, and specifically by, knowledge is a little touchy. I think knowledge sometimes can include intent and ID, because it's the defendant's knowledge that he's acting in a certain manner and that this result here, the sexual contact, is going to occur. And again, when you look at that under a plain error standard, on appeal, they are arguing that this is so outrageous and so egregious, but it wasn't so egregious at the time of trial that on the four or five times that this instruction was read, it even garnered an objection from the defense.
What is the status of pattern of behavior now under 404B? Is it now another reason that it can be introduced? Or?
I think it can be in a situation like this where it's the pattern that's making it relevant, the similarities between, especially in a situation.
How is that different from absence of mistake or whatever?
I don't think it's any different than common plan, scheme, or design. I think it's the same thing. I think it's the language the trial court used as opposed to scheme or design. I mean, the defendant was successful using this design to sexually assault children or boys. And the DA, in closing argument, repeatedly referred the jury back to the limiting instructions. He said, this isn't a case about JW. It's not a case about DR. It's not about JF. What we are saying is, as this judge told you, we can use this, the evidence of what happened to these other boys, to determine the defendant's knowledge, because that's one of the things that we have to prove. He knew how to make them trust him, and he continued to go back to, he used common plan and pattern of behavior kind of interchangeably, and then did specifically direct them back to the instruction. And again, no objections throughout the closing argument. So I think looking at it under the SPOTO test, I think the four requirements were met. I think the trial court did a very good job in its written ruling detailing why they were relevant, what the similarities were. In the written ruling, the trial court did say that they were admissible to prove intent, motive, grooming behavior, common scheme, and that the allegations were substantially similar. There's nothing on the record to really tell us why the specific ruling in the written instruction then changed in the limiting instruction. But again, at the time of trial, it didn't wave any red flags for the defense in the context of the jury trial itself. And I think that the fact that the limiting instructions were read multiple times and again at the end of the instruction is significant. I am happy to address either of the other issues if the court has any questions on those, but if the court doesn't have any questions, I'll just rest on how I presented those issues in my brief.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. With respect to the phrase pattern behavior, again, I would emphasize that the phrase is being used for or alleged that it should be used for a particular legal purpose. This is not colloquial talk or banter among lawyers or judges, Your Honors. This is now what the state is asserting is a particular purpose that is, and while they want to say that it's the same as common scheme and plan, it's not a redundant instruction. The jury's not going to read it as being a redundancy. And the prosecution, while they made some fleeting reference to common scheme or plan, certainly highlighted the pattern of behavior purpose over all others. And why is that? Because it's such a broad stroke. It's unlimited. And they were able to lump all four of these men together. That was...
Below, there was no objection made to the limiting instruction or to the prosecutor's closing argument.
Correct. And I'm conceding that it's plain error review. I think that this is an obvious error because it's not supported in Colorado case law, the idea that pattern of behavior is a proper purpose. Again, getting back to just reading the first line of 404B, that the state would assert or this court would have to announce that the acts are admissible to prove a pattern of behavior to show that the defendant is guilty and acted in accordance with that pattern of behavior, that's a repudiation of the first law.
That is to say Justice Coates was wrong? Is that?
Well, I try to distinguish the Rapp opinion, and I think that in Rapp, under logical relevance, when Justice Coates is talking about the acts, if I may, he's talking about, and he ends up talking about or referencing the particular uniqueness of the manner in which this particular defendant picked up these women. That is, he used his pickup truck, he went out on roads, he asked them to get into the truck, he took them to secluded places. And so this evidence, the particular purpose the state sought to introduce and that the court said was fine, was identity, modus operandi, etc.
Okay, now help me understand how exactly is that different from the various commonalities in the charged offense and the other three young men?
Well, I think that what should happen, for example, and under identity, if identity is the proper purpose, if the evidence is being, the jury is being instructed to use the evidence, not for a pattern of behavior generally, which is what this does, but to say we're using it for identity with respect to this particular defendant, that he did this, or modus operandi, it's so unique that he did this. But the commonality, to say there's a commonality, if you want to talk about common scheme or common plan, again, Colorado has case law that identifies what that particular purpose is, which says that there's got to be a nexus between the acts, the other acts, and the alleged acts. There's a connectivity, a continuity. It doesn't have to be all one transaction, but it has to be connected. But this does not require any of that. These are not connected, by the way. Mr. Evans does take issue with the trial court's finding that there's a common plan or scheme here, because there isn't. We have acts that occur back in 96, and we have acts that occur in 98. We have years that are passing by, and there's no connectivity between a connection, temporal and logistic connection between.
It wasn't he used position within the church to facilitate these acts. I mean, that could be the connectivity that the trial court found.
Well, if the instruction had provided common scheme, common plan, and knowledge, and that was it, I wouldn't be here today with regard to this particular issue, and the prosecution wouldn't have been arguing pattern of behavior as vociferously as they had. And then they would have been able to employ the proper limiting instruction. This is not a limiting instruction in our view. It's simply it's a free-for-all, really, in which the prosecution could lump them all together at one time. And for those reasons, we would ask the court to reverse Mr. Evans' convictions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for their briefs and arguments. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.